And welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune, and this is part two of Be Careful What You Wish For by R.L. Stine on Dune Reads Goosebumps. First off, thank you to Nina for being the first person to actually PayPal me. There's a PayPal link on DuneReadsGoosebumps.com. With it, you can request books. You can help me out. I'd appreciate that thoroughly, as I'm broke. Goddamn car insurance is expensive. So that's all squared away. You can do that. I'd appreciate it. I'm trying to legitimize this. That's what I'm doing. So for once ever, I'm requesting that you do something back, which is go tell a friend. Go give me a rating and a star on some iTunes. Bump it up a little bit. Toss me some money if you have extra. If you don't, then don't. You know? Whatever. I'll still keep it up, but that would definitely encourage me to do so. In the Giovanni, hey, talk about something before you go on, which is normally recent stuff in my personal life, I wanted to go into the fact that if you're ever in Las Vegas and you have a car either rented or you drive in there, there's a place you can look online that's called Ruse and More. It's an hour outside of Vegas, definitely worth the drive, beautiful drive through the fucking desert where no one is, and you can get away from like touristy corporate hell of Vegas, right? This place only opened like 2 days a month, and it's just a wildlife, like, not even a preserve, it's small, it's in like someone's lot of land in their house, a big lot of land, and you go in there, you pay your $10, and there's kangaroos and lemurs and monkeys and otters and lemurs and fucking llamas and zebras and ostriches and shit and sloths, and you can go there. And you pay your little visitor fee, and then you just walk around and just animals come up to you. I literally made out with a lemur. A lemur's tongue has been in my mouth, as well as a wallaroo. And the girlfriend got to pet a sloth, and she cried, and you can just pet these animals. You can pay, like, I think it's like $16, and just have otters. Like, normal, beautiful, cute sea otters just crawl all over you. So, way better than anything in Vegas. And that's what you should do. Greatest thing ever. If you're personally friends with me on Facebook, there's tons of pictures. Greatest thing. Greatest thing! How's that, Gio? I talked about my personal life. I liked it. Chapter! Just cutting right into it. 13. I stared at her. My mouth dropped open in horror. They're gone. They're gone for at least a week, Audrey said. She bent to lock the office door. They I squeaked. She had trouble pulling the key from the lock. They went to the doctor, she repeated. Their moms called this morning. They're very sick. Both girls have the flu or something. Possibly HIV. They felt very weak. Too weak to come to school. Too weak to march in the gay pride parade. I breathed... Scarlet, you're being rude. I breathed a sigh of relief. I was glad Audrey had been concentrating on the door lock, so she hadn't seen the horrified look on my face. Audrey hurried off down the hall. As soon as she was out of sight, I slumped against the wall. At least they're not dead, I moaned. She scared me to death. Corey shook his head. Audrey scared me, too, he confessed. See? Judith and Anna just have the flu. I'm sure the doctors... They don't have the flu, goddammit, I insisted. They're weak because of my wish. Call them later, he suggested. You'll see. They're probably much better. I can't wait till later, I said in a trembling voice. I have to do something, Corey. I have to do something to keep them from getting weaker and weaker until they shrivel up and die. Completely unlike the Stephen King book Thinner. Not like that at all. Nothing similar, says R.L. Stine. Calm down, Sam. I started pacing back and forth in front of him. Some kids came hurrying by on their way to their lockers. Someone called to me, but I didn't reply. We've got to go to class, Corey said. I think you're getting all weird over nothing. Sam, if you wait till tomorrow... She said I had 3 wishes, I exclaimed, not hearing a word Corey was saying. I only used one. Sam... Corey shook his head disapprovingly. I've got to find her, I said. I've got to find that strange woman. Don't you see? I can wish to have the first wish undone. She said I get 3 wishes, so my second wish can be to erase the first. This idea was starting to make me feel a lot better. But then Corey brought me back down into my gloom with one question. How are you going to find her, Sam? So I'm recording this on a Thursday night when I would normally record comics online, but something came up in my personal life and I couldn't record it, so now it's 2 hours later than that when I normally start that, and I'm doing this podcast instead. So a podcast is a podcast. Obviously this one's better, but still, getting something out there, being productive, feeling good about myself. I'm drinking a 32-ounce bottle of King Cobra Premium Malt Liquor, Chapter 14. I thought about Corey's question all afternoon. I barely heard a word anyone said to me, probably because I'm one of those gross people you see on the internet with baby cockroaches in my ear. We had a vocab test near the end of the day. I stared at the words as if they were in Martian. Oh, God, there's no people on Mars. They don't have a language, idiot. After a while, I heard Lisa, my teacher, calling my name. She was standing right in front of me, but I don't think I heard her until her fifth or sixth try. "Are you okay, Samantha?" she asked, leaning over me. I knew she was wondering why I hadn't started my test. "I feel a little sick," I replied quietly. I'll be okay. "I'll be okay as soon as I find that weird woman and get her to erase her spell. But where will I find her?" I wondered where. After school, I reported to the gym for basketball practice. Everyone on my team was absent, so practice was canceled. Absent because of me. I trudged upstairs to my locker and retrieved my down jacket, which should have been a starter jacket because it was the 90s and she was into playing hoops. As I slammed the door and locked it, I had an idea. The woods. Jeffers Woods. That's where I found Clarissa. I'll bet I can find her there again and she can explain it all. Na 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 na. Maybe it's her secret meeting place, I thought. Maybe she'll be waiting there for me. Of course she will, I told myself, giving myself a pep talk. Why did it take me so long to think of this? It made perfect sense. Humming to myself, I started jogging to the door. The hallway was nearly empty. I stopped when I saw a familiar figure in the doorway. Mom! Hi, Sam, she waved to me. Even though I was standing right in front of her, she had her red and white wool cap pulled over her short blonde hair and was wearing the tattered red ski jacket she always wears. She hadn't been skiing in years, but she liked to dress like a ski bum. Is that something people did, or is she a crazy person? Mom, what are you doing here? I cried, not meaning to sound as unfriendly as I did. I was eager to get to my bike and ride to Jeffers Woods, and I didn't need that cunt here. You didn't forget about your appointment with Dr. Stone? She asked, waving a bong in her hand. No, she was just waving her car keys. Get it, because Dr. Stone? You get it. I know you guys are talking about marijuana. It's illegal, guys. I don't do it, but that's okay if you guys do. All right. The orthodontist? Today? I cried. I can't. You have to, she replied sternly, tugging the arm of my jacket. You know how hard it is to get to see Mr. Stone, or Dr. Stone, whatever. But I don't want braces, I cried, just like Dune did, but he's glad he got them, realizing I was sounding a little shrill, a little babyish. Maybe you won't need them, Mom said, pulling me to the door. Maybe you can get by with just a retainer. We'll do whatever Dr. Stone says. But Mom, I searched my mind desperately for an excuse. I can't go with you, I have my bike here, I cried desperately. Go get it, we'll put it in the trunk, she replied without blinking. I had no choice. I had to go with her. Sighing loudly, I pushed open the door and hurried past her toward the bike racks. I found out I'm going to be wearing braces for at least the next 6 months. I had another appointment with Dr. Stone to have them put on next week. I suppose I should have been upset about it, but it was so hard to think about braces with Judith, Anna, and the other girls on my mind. I kept picturing them in the shower, or just laying down in bed in their 90s with it just sheer against their I kept picturing them wasting away, getting thinner and thinner, weaker and weaker. I kept seeing this terrifying image in my mind. I was in the gym, dribbling the ball back and forth, faster and faster, and Judith, Anna, and the others were lying flat on their backs on the bleachers, trying to watch, but too weak to hold their heads up. That night, after dinner, I was feeling so guilty. I called Judith to see how she was feeling. I think it was the first time in my life I've ever called her. Mr. Bellwood answered. Mrs. Bellwood answered. They sound the same. She's going through hormone therapy. Mrs. Bellwood is about to get her Miss Bellendwood right into Mr. Bellwood, because that's what he's into. She's doing the hormone therapy for him, not her, which is very loving. She sounded tired and tense. "Who is this?" she asked. I had a sudden impulse to hang up, but I told her, "It's Samantha Bird. I'm a friend from school." "Some friend." "I don't think Judith can come to the phone," she replied. "She's just so weak." "Did the doctor say what?" I started. "I'll ask Judith if she wants to talk," Mrs. Bellwood interrupted. I could hear Judith's little brother shouting something in the background, and I could hear cartoon music from their TV. "Samurai Pizza Cats!" "Don't stay too long," she instructed.
"Hello?"
Judith answered in a faint little girl voice.
"Oh,
hi, Judith, it's me, Sam," I said, trying not to sound nervous.
"Sam?"
Again, the faint voice, nearly a whisper. "Sam Bird," I stammered. I was just wondering how you're feeling.
"Sam, did you cast a spell on us?"
Judith asked. I gasped. How did she know?
Why don't I have a topic on Dime for Scale? Chapter 15, Franklin!
Judith, what do you mean? I sputtered.
All the girls are sick except for you,
Judith replied.
Anna's sick, and so is Arlene, and Krista, and Connie, and Nina.
Yes, but what does... That doesn't mean I started.
So, I think you cast a spell on us,
Judith interrupted. Was she joking? I couldn't tell. It's hard to tell, as women have no sense of humor. I just hope you feel better, I mumbled awkwardly. I could hear Mrs. Bellwood in the background telling Judith she better get the fuck off the phone. So I said goodbye and hung up. I was grateful it was a short conversation, but I couldn't decide if Judith was kidding or not about my casting a spell. Her voice was really weak. She sounded so weary and lifeless. I felt angry that she had accused me, joke or no joke. That was so typical of Judith, finding a way to make me angry even when I was calling to be nice. But I also felt guilty. Whether Judith had guessed it or not, I had to cast a spell on her and the others. And now I had to find a way to have that spell removed. The next morning, two seats in my class were empty again. Judith and Anna were both absent. At lunch, I asked Corey if he wanted to come with me after school to go searching for the strange woman.
"No way!" he cried, shaking his head. "She'll probably turn me into a frog or something!"
"Corey, can't you take this seriously?" I screamed. Several kids turned to look.
"Give me a break,"
Corey muttered, sounding cool as hell, blushing under his Orlando Magic hat.
"Okay, I'm sorry," I told him. "I'm really stressed out, you know."
"Maybe you should see Dr. Stone up top." He still refused to keep me company. He made up a lame excuse about having to go help his mother clean the basement. Who cleans their basement in the middle of winter? I'm from California. We don't have basements. This is bumming me out. Is that when you're not supposed to clean a basement? That seems like a reasonable time to clean a basement. Corey pretended he didn't believe my story about the woman and the three wishes, but I had the feeling that maybe he was just a little afraid. I was afraid, too. Afraid I wouldn't find her. After school, I jumped to my bike and began pedaling towards Jeffers Woods. It was a gray, blustery day. Enormous dark clouds rolled rapidly over the sky, threatening rain, maybe snow. It's a lot like the day I ran into Clarissa, I thought. For some reason, that fact encouraged me. Some kids in my class waved to me and called out, but I rode past those motherfuckers, leaning over the handlebars, shifting gears to pick up speed. A few minutes later, Montrose Avenue curved away from the houses that lined both sides, and the bare trees of the woods came into view. The tall trees formed a dark wall, darker than the charcoal sky above.
She's got to be here. She's got to be here. I repeated in rhythm with my pedaling feet. Got to be here. Got to be here. Got to be here. Pedaling feet are apparently on this rhythm. Got to be here. My heart nearly leapt out of my chest when I saw her, huddled low at the edge of the road, waiting for me. Hi, I called out. Hi, it's me. Why didn't she answer?
Chapter 16.
What the fuck was that? As I pedaled closer, my heart pounding happily, I saw that she had her back turned to me. She had changed her outfit. She was wearing a purple wool beret and a long black coat like those people you hated that were in drama in high school, nearly down to her ankles. I screeched my bike to a halt a few feet behind her, my tires skidding over the pebble road. I need to make another wish, I called breathlessly. She turned. And I gasped. I stared into a face full of freckles. A young-looking face framed by short, curly blonde hair. I'm sorry, what did you say? She asked, narrowing her eyes at me, her expression bewildered. I'm sorry, I stammered, feeling my face turn hot. I thought you were someone else. It was a different woman. I felt so embarrassed. I just wanted to die. Behind her, I saw two blonde-haired kids tossing a frisbee back and forth at the edge of the woods. Tommy, don't throw it so hard. Your sister can't catch it. the woman instructed. Then she turned back to me. What'd you say about wishes? Are you lost? She asked, studying my face with concern. I knew I was still blushing, but I couldn't help it. No, I thought you were, I started. Tommy, go chase it yourself, goddammit, she shouted to her little boy. The two kids started squabbling. She hurried over to settle it. Sorry I bothered you, I called. Bye. I turned my bike around and started pedaling rapidly toward home. I was embarrassed that I'd said such a stupid thing to a total stranger, but mainly I was disappointed. I really had expected that strange woman to be there. Where else could she be? I asked. I remembered that I had shown her the way to Madison Road. Maybe, I decided, I will get lucky and run into her there. It was a long shot, but I was desperate. Just like I would be all throughout my 20s, she thought to herself. I turned my bike around and made my way to Madison. The wind had picked up and my face began to feel cold and raw. I was riding against the wind and the sharp cold was making my eyes water. Even through the blur, I could see that the woman was not hanging around on Madison waiting for me to show up. Two mangy brown mutts trotted side by side across the street, their heads bowed against the wind. They were the only living creatures that I saw.
King Cobra.
I rode slowly back and forth a few times, my eyes searching the rambling old houses of the neighborhood. A total waste of time, just like Dune Reed's Goosebumps. I was completely frozen. My eyes and ears and nose tingled with numbness. My watering eyes sent cold tears running down my cheeks. Give up, Sam, I instructed myself out loud. The sky darkened. The storm clouds hovered low above the shivering trees. Feeling miserable and defeated, I turned and headed for home. I was pedaling furiously down the center of the street, trying to keep my bike upright in the gusting wind. I stopped when Judith's house came into view. It was a long, low, redwood ranch-style house. Creamy ranch. Original ranch. Aw, yeah, Hidden Valley Ranch-style house, set back from the street on a wide, sloping front lawn. Maybe I'll stop for a minute and see how Judith is doing, I decided. It'll give me a chance to get warm, too, I thought, reaching up a hand and felt my nose, totally numb. Shivering, I rode up the driveway and lowered my bike to the ground. Then, trying to rub some feeling into my poor nose, I jogged up the walk and rang the doorbell. Miss Bellwood seemed very surprised to see a visitor. I told her who I was and that I just happened to be riding by. How's Judith feeling? I asked, shivering. "'Bout the same, she replied with a whole new accent. She had Judith's green eyes, but her hair was nearly entirely gray. She led me into the hallway, which felt toasty and warm. Cinnamon toasty and warm. The house smelled of roasting chicken. I suddenly realized I was hungry.
Judith, you got a visitor,
Mrs. Bellwood shouted up the stairs. I heard a weak reply, but I couldn't make out the words.
Go on up.
Get her done, Judith's mother said, putting a hand on the shoulder of my coat.
You look so cold, she added, shaking her head. Be careful. You don't want to get sick, too. You don't want to be sicker than a hog poking his head in a windmill.
Wait, there's no windmills in the South.
Damn it!
Is there? God, I'm so bad at making fun of races, or I guess groups of people. God, I'm so glad. Calm down, Noon.
I climbed the stairs and found Judith's room at the end of the hall. I hesitated at the doorway and peered in. The room was dimly lit. I could see Judith lying in bed, on top of the quilt, her head propped on several pillows. Books and magazines and a couple of school notebooks were scattered over the bed, but Judith wasn't reading. She was just staring straight ahead.
Stork?
She cried, seeing me in the doorway. I entered the room, forcing a smile to my face.
How are you feeling?
I asked softly.
What are you doing here?
She asked coldly. Her voice was hoarse. I was riding my bike, and I stammered, staying by the door. I was startled by her anger.
Riding your bike in this cold?
With great effort, she pulled herself up to a sitting position. Leaning against the headboard, she glared at me suspiciously.
I just wondered how you were doing, I muttered.
Why don't you just fly away, bird?
She growled nastily.
Huh? You are a witch, aren't you?
She accused.
I couldn't believe she was saying these things. I was stunned, shocked, flabbergasted.
It was no joke. I could see that she was serious.
You did cast a spell on us. I know it.
Judith, please, I cried. What are you saying?
We did a unit on witches in social study last year,
she said in her hoarse voice.
We studied spells and things, and I saw a documentary called The Craft, and the girl from the second Oz movie that was really weird and creepy, and I don't know why they made it, she was in it.
That's crazy, I insisted. They didn't make another Oz movie.
Yes, they did. It was just weird. It was in the 80s, and it was weird. And those guys that like went around these little carts, and everything was kind of steampunk and just gave you the willies. You're just jealous of me, Sam, of me and Anna and everyone else,
Judith accused.
So, I cried angrily,
so all of a sudden all the girls on the team feel sick and weak except for you?
Sam, you feel fine, right?
Judith, listen to me, I pleaded.
You're a witch, Sam,
she screamed, her voice weak and breaking. She started to cough.
Judith, you're talking like a crazy person, I insisted. I'm not a witch. How could I be a witch? I'm sorry you're sick. Really, I am, but...
You're a witch! You're a witch!
Judith chanted, her voice shrill, a shrill whisper.
I've talked to all the girls. They all agree. You're a witch! A witch!
I was so furious, I thought I'd explode. I had my hands balled into tight fists. My head was throbbing. Judith had been talking to all the other girls, spreading the story that I was a witch. How could she do such a crazy thing?
A witch! A witch!
She continued to chant. I was so upset, I totally lost it.
Judith, I shrieked. I never would have done it to you if you hadn't been so horrible to me. One more time so it actually works. I never would have done it to you if you hadn't been so horrible to me.
I realized immediately that I'd made a terrible mistake. I had just admitted to her that I was responsible for her being sick. I had just blurted out that I was a witch. But I was so furious, I didn't give a fuck.
I knew it,
Judith croaked in her hoarse voice, her green eyes glowing excitedly, pointing an accusing finger at me.
What's going on here? What's all this shouting?
Judith's mother appeared, talking like Uncle Remus.
Is that what it is? That is Br'er Rabbit?
Uncle Remus. Yeah. Judith's mother appeared in the room, her eyes flashing back and forth between me and Judith.
She's a witch! A witch!
Judith screamed. Judith,
Your voice, stop it! Miss Bellwood cried, running to the bed. She turned back to me. I think Judas is delirious. She's saying such crazy things. Please don't pay attention. She's a witch. She admitted it. She's a witch. Judith shrieked. Judith, please. You have to calm down. You have to save your strength. Miss Bellwood pleaded. I'm sorry, I'll go now, I said sharply. I darted out the room, ran down the stairs and out the house as fast as I could.
A witch! A witch!
Judas' hoarse chant followed me out. I was so angry, so hurt, so humiliated. I felt about to explode. I wish Judas would disappear, I screamed. I really do.
Very well. That shall be your second wish,
said a voice behind me. I spun around to see the strange woman standing at the side of the house. Her long black hair fluttered behind her in the gusting wind. She held the glowing red ball high. Her eyes glowed as red as the ball. I shall cancel your first wish, she said in her shaky old lady voice, and I shall grant you your second.
Franklin! You gonna sit up there while I do this? It's fine, you can do that.
Chapter 17. Whoop whoop. No, wait, I cried. The woman smiled and pulled her shawl over her head.
Wait, I didn't mean it, I cried, running towards her. I didn't know you were there. Wait, ow!
My foot caught on a loose stone in the walk and I stumbled. I hit my knees hard. The pain shot through my entire body. When I looked up, she was gone. How spooky is that, Franklin?
What she's saying is she was yelling at her to stop. She fell, and then she looked up and she wasn't there. Well, thank you for the kisses.
After dinner, Ron agreed to play basketball out back, but it was too cold and windy. A light snow had started to fall. We settled for ping pong in the basement, which everyone knows backward is Gnip-Gnop. Ping pong games in our basement are always difficult. For one thing, the ceiling is so low, the ball is always hitting it and bouncing crazily away. Also, Pumpkin has a bad habit of chasing after the ball and biting holes in it. Ping pong is the only sport I'm good at. Like Asians, I have a really tricky serve. Wait, is playing cello a sport? Or is math? Nope, just ping pong. And I'm good at slamming the ball down at my opponent's throat. I can usually beat Ron 2 games out of 3, but tonight, he could see my heart wasn't in it.
What up?
He asked. As we batted the ball softly back and forth, his dark eyes peered into mine from behind his black framed glasses. I decided I had to tell them about Clarissa and her red crystal ball and the 3 wishes. I was so desperate to tell someone. I helped this strange woman a few days ago, I blurted out, and she granted me 3 wishes. I made a wish, and now all the girls on my basketball team are going to die! Ron dropped his paddle on the table, his mouth dropped open.
What an amazing coincidence, he cried.
Huh? I gaped at him.
I met my fairy godmother yesterday, Ron exclaimed. She promised to make me the richest man in the world, and she's going to give me a solid gold cock with a swimming pool in the back.
See, it said Mercedes instead of cock. So the swimming pool, I didn't know that line was coming. So the swimming pool in the back of your solid gold cock does not make a lot of sense. Plus, who would want a solid gold cock? It looks tacky. You want silver. He burst out laughing. He thinks he's such a riot. I let out an angry, frustrated groan. Then I tossed my paddle at him and ran upstairs to my room. I slammed the bedroom door behind me and began to pace back and forth, my arms crossed tightly in front of me. I kept telling myself that I had to calm down, that it wasn't good to be this stressed out. But of course, telling yourself to calm down does not do you any good. It only makes you more tense. I decided I had to do something to occupy my mind. Occupy Sam's mind, hashtag, to keep myself from thinking about Judith and Clarissa and the new wish I accidentally made, my second wish. It's not fair, I cried aloud, still pacing. After all, I didn't know I was making a second wish.
Bye, Franklin.
That woman tricked me. She peered out of nowhere and tricked me. I stepped in front of my mirror and fiddled with my hair. I have very fine, light blonde hair. It's so fine.
Oh, hair, you're so fine, there's so much of it I can't do with it. There isn't much I can do with it. That's what I wanted to say.
I usually tie it in a ponytail on the right side of my head, because goddammit, it's the 90s. It's a style I saw on a model that looked like me, in 17. That was in italics, meaning it was 17 magazine. Just to keep my hands busy, I tried to do something else with my hair. Studying myself in the mirror, I tried sweeping it straight back. Then, I tried parting it in the middle and letting it fall over my ears.
It looked really lame.
The activity wasn't helping. I wasn't taking my mind off Judith at all. I pulled it back into the same old ponytail. Then I brushed it for a while, tossed down the brush with a sigh, and returned to pacing. My big question, of course, was, had my wish come true? Had I caused Judith to disappear? As much as I hated Judith, I certainly didn't want to be responsible for making her disappear forever. With a loud moan, I tossed myself down on my bed. What should I do? I asked myself. I had to know if the wish had come true. I decided to call her house. I wouldn't talk to her. I'd just call her house and see if she was still around. I wouldn't even tell them who's calling. I looked up Judith's number in the school directory. I didn't know it by heart. I had only called it once before. Honest Injun. I added that. I don't know how that helped in any way. That was really stupid. I regret doing that. But you can't, like, edit podcasts or anything, you know? My hand was shaking as I reached for the phone on my desk. I punched in her phone number. It took me 3 tries. I kept making mistakes. I was really scared. I felt as if my stomach were tied in a knot and my heart had jumped up in my throat. The phone rang. 1 ring! 2 rings! 3 ring-a-ding-a-ding-ding. Had she disappeared?
This is the 18th chapter of Be Careful What You Wish For, written by the great R.L. Stein.
4 rings. No answer. She's gone, I murmured aloud, a chill running down my back. Before the 5th ring could begin, I heard a clicking sound. Someone had picked up the receiver.
Hello?
Judith?
Hello? Who is this?
She demanded. I slammed the receiver down. My heart was pounding. My hands were ice cold. I breathed a sigh of relief. Judith was there. She was definitely there. She hadn't vanished from the face of the earth. And I realized her voice had returned to normal. She didn't sound hoarse or weak. She sounded as nasty as ever, as nasty as she wants to be. What did this mean? I jumped to my feet and began pacing back and forth, trying to figure it all out. Of course, I couldn't figure it out. Duh, I'm a girl. I only knew that the second wish hadn't been granted. Feeling a little relieved, I went to bed and quickly fell into a heavy, dreamless sleep. I opened one eye. And then the other. Pale morning sunlight was shining through my bedroom window. With a sleepy groan, I pushed down the covers and started to sit up. My eye went to the clock above my desk, and I gasped. Nearly 8:10! I rubbed my eyes and looked again. Yes, 8:10! Huh? I cried, trying to clear the sleep from my voice. Mom wakes me up every morning at 7 so I can get to school by 8:30. What the fuck happened? There was no way I'd be on time now. Hey, Mom! I shouted. Mom! I jumped out of bed. My long legs got tangled up in the covers and I nearly fell over. Great way to start the day with a typical Samantha Klutz move. Hey, Mom! I shouted out the bedroom door. What happened? I'm late. Not hearing a reply, I pulled off my nightshirt and quickly searched the closet for some clean clothes to wear. Today was Friday. Rebecca Black tweeted me to let me know this. Laundry day. So I was down to the bottom of the pile. Hey, Mom! Ron? Anybody up? Dad leaves the house for work every morning at 7. Usually I hear him moving around. This morning I hadn't heard a sound. I pulled on a pair of faded jeans and a pale green sweater. Then I brushed my hair, staring at my still sleepy face in the mirror. Anybody up? I shouted, like the website that no longer exists. How come no one woke me up today? It's not a holiday,
is it?
I listened carefully as I tugged on my Doc Martens. No radio on down in the kitchen. How weird, I thought. Mom has that radio tuned to the all-news station every morning. We fight about it every morning. She wants news, I want music. Cool 90s kid. But today, I couldn't hear a sound down there. What the fuck is going on? Hey, I'm gonna have to skip breakfast, I shouted down the stairs. I'm late. No reply. I took one last look in the mirror, brushed a strand of hair off my forehead, and hurried out into the hall. My brother's room is next door to mine. His door was closed.
Uh-oh, Ron, I thought. Did you sleep late, too?
I pounded on the door.
Ron! Ron, are you awake?
Silence.
Ron!
I pushed open the door. His room was dark, except for the pale light from the window. The bed was made.
Had Ron already left? Why had he made his bed? It would be the first time in his life he ever did.
Boys.
Hey, Mom!
Confused, I hurried down the stairs. Halfway down, I stumbled and nearly fell.
Klutz move number two.
Pretty good for so early in the morning.
What's going on down here? Is it the weekend? Did I sleep through Friday?
I slept through Friday because it's an overrated movie that we all loved because we saw it when we were like 10, and now we saw it again, and we're like, oh, Craig, you ain't funny. This is terrible. The kitchen was empty. No Mom. No Ron. No breakfast.
Did they go somewhere early?
I checked the refrigerator for a note.
Nothing.
Puzzled, I glanced at the clock.
Nearly 8:30. I was already late for school. Why didn't anyone wake me up? Why were they all gone so early in the morning? I pinched myself. I really did.
I thought maybe I was dreaming. But no, such luck.
Hey, anyone!
I called. My voice rang through the empty house. I ran to the front closet to get my coat. I had to get to school. I was sure this mystery would be cleared up later. I quickly pulled on my coat and ran upstairs for my bakupaku. That's how you say backpack in Japanese. My stomach was grumbling and growling. I was used to at least a glass of juice or a bowl of cereal for breakfast.
Oh well, I thought. I'll buy an extra big lunch.
A few seconds later, I headed out the front door and around to the side of the garage to get my bike. I pulled up the garage door and stopped. I froze, staring into the garage.
My dad's car. It was still in the garage.
He hadn't left for work.
So where was everybody?
It would be funny if that was the end and the dad just killed all the family members that he cared about by turning the car on in the garage and she was totally left out and had to live her whole life knowing that she wasn't worth killing.
Do-do-do-do. Chapter 19.
Yeah.
Back in my house, I phoned my dad's office. The phone rang and rang. No one answered. I checked the kitchen for a message from Mom or Dad, but I couldn't find a thing. Glancing at the kitchen clock, I saw I was already 20 minutes late for school. I needed a late excuse note, but no one was there to write it for me. I hurried back outside to get my bike.
Better late than never, I thought.
I wasn't exactly frightened, I was just puzzled. I'll call my mom or dad at lunchtime and find out where everyone went this morning, I told myself. As I pedaled to school, I began to feel a little angry.
She's an angry bird, because her name's Bird and she's angry.
God, Dune, you're so good. Someone should send you money. They could have at least told me they were leaving early. There were no cars on the street and no kids on bikes. I guess that everyone was already at school or work or wherever people go in the morning, like the methadone clinic. I got to school in a record time, leaving my bike in the bike rack. I adjusted my backpack on my shoulders and ran into school. The halls were dark and empty. My footsteps echoed loudly on the hard floor. I dropped my coat into my locker. When I slammed the locker door, it sounded like an explosion in the empty hallway. The halls were kind of creepy when they're empty, I thought. I jogged to my classroom, which was just a few doors down from my locker.
My mom forgot to wake me up, so I overslept and...
That was the excuse I planned to give Sharon as soon as I entered the room. I mean, it wasn't just an excuse, it was the truth. But I never got to tell Sharon my reason for being late. I pulled open the door to the classroom and stared in shock. Empty. The room was empty. No kids. No Sharon. The lights hadn't been turned on, and yesterday's work was still on the chalkboard. Weird, I thought, like Homestar Runner. But I didn't know how weird things were going to get. I froze for a moment, staring into the dark, empty room. Then I decided that everyone must be at an assembly in the auditorium. I turned quickly and made my way to the auditorium at the front of the school, jogging down the empty corridor. The door to the teacher's lounge was open. I peered in and was surprised to find it empty, too. Maybe all the teachers are at the assembly, too, I thought. A few seconds later, I pulled open the double doors to the auditorium and peered into darkness.
The auditorium was silent and empty. I pushed the door shut and began to run down the hall, stopping to look in every room.
It didn't take long to realize that I was the only person in the building. No kids, no teachers, and I even checked the janitor's room downstairs. No creepy molesting janitors.
Is it Sunday? Is it a holiday?
I tried to figure out where everyone had gone, but I couldn't. Feeling the first stirrings of panic in my chest, I dropped a quarter in the payphone next to the principal's office and called home. I let it ring at least 10 times. Still, no one home.
Where the fuck is everyone? I shouted down the empty corridor.
The only reply came from my echoing voice.
Where the fuck is everyone? Where the fuck is everyone? Dune rules, swag, swag, swag.
Can anybody hear me? I shouted, cupping my hands around my mouth. Silence. I suddenly felt very frightened. I had to get out of the creepy school building. I grabbed my coat and started to run. I didn't even bother to close the locker door. Carrying my coat over my shoulder, I ran outside to the bike rack. My bike was the only bike parked there. I scolded myself for not noticing that when I arrived. I pulled on my coat, arranged my backpack, and started for home. Again, I saw no cars on the street. No people.
This is so weird,
I cried out loud. My legs suddenly felt heavy, as if something was weighing them down. I knew it was only my panic. My heart was pounding. I kept searching desperately for someone, anyone on the street. Halfway home, I turned around and headed my bike to town. The small shopping district was just a few blocks north of school. I rode in the center of the street. There was no reason not to. No cars or trucks appeared in either direction. The bank came into view, followed by the grocery store. As I pedaled as hard as I could, I noticed all the other shops that lined both sides of Montrose Avenue. All dark and empty. Not a soul in town. Not even a ginger. Not a person in any store, not one. I braked the bike in front of Farber's Hardware and jumped off. The bike fell onto its side. I stepped into the sidewalk and listened. I put my hand to my ear to insinuate that I was listening. The only sound was the banging of a shutter being blown by the wind above the barber shop. Hello? I called at the top of my voice. Hello? I started running frantically from store to store, pressing my face against the windows, peering inside, searching desperately for another human being. Back and forth. I covered both sides of the street, my fear growing heavier inside me with each step, with each dark store.
Hello? Hello? Can anyone hear me?
Dune yelled without trying to yell too loud because he didn't want his neighbors to call the cops. But I knew it was a waste of my voice, like Dune Raid's goosebumps. Standing in the center of the street, staring at the dark stores and empty sidewalks, I knew that I was alone. Alone in the world. I suddenly realized my second wish had been granted. Judith had disappeared. And everyone else had disappeared with her. Everyone. My mom and dad. My brother Ron. Everyone. Would I ever see them again? I slumped down on the cement stoop in front of the barber shop and hugged myself, trying to stop my body from trembling. Now what? I wondered miserably. Now what?
Chapter 20.
I don't know how long I sat there on the stoop, hugging myself, my head lowered, my mind in total spinning panic. I think this is the lyrics to Where's My Mind by the Pixies. I would have sat there forever, listening to the banging shutter, listening to the wind blow through the deserted street, if my stomach hadn't started to growl and rumble. I stood up, suddenly remembering that I had missed my breakfast. Sam, you're all alone in the world. How can you think about eating? I asked myself out loud. Somehow, it was comforting to hear a human voice, even though it was my own.
I'm starving,
I shouted. I listened for a response. It was really stupid, but I refused to give up hope.
This is all Judith's fault,
I muttered, picking up my bike from the street. I rode home through the empty streets, my eyes searching the deserted yards and houses. As I passed the Carter's house on the corner of my block, I expected their little white terrier to come yapping after my bike the way he always did. But there weren't even any dogs in the world. Not even my poor little pumpkin.
Not even Franklin! Franklin!
There was just me, Samantha Bird, and Dune. Dune to tell my story. The last person on Earth, and the last podcaster on Earth. As soon as I got home, I rushed into the kitchen, made myself a peanut butter sandwich. Gobbling it down, I stared at the open peanut butter jar. It was nearly empty. How am I going to feed myself? I wondered aloud, having not read the road. What do I do when the food runs out? I started to fill a glass with orange juice, but I hesitated and filled it up only halfway. Do I rob the grocery store? I asked myself. Do I just take the food I need? Is it really robbing if there's no one there? If there's no one anywhere? Does it matter? Does anything matter? That's how I felt as a teenager as well. How can I take care of myself? I'm only 12! I shouted, proving to Dune that I'm not a teenager. For the first time, I felt the urge to cry, but I jammed another hunk of peanut butter sandwich in my mouth and forced the urge away. Instead, I turned my thoughts to Judith, and my unhappiness and fear quickly gave way to anger. If Judith hadn't made fun of me, hadn't tried to embarrass me, if Judith hadn't constantly sneered at me and said, "Baird, why don't you just fly away?" and all the other horrible bullshit she said to me, then I wouldn't have never have made these stupid wishes about her. I wouldn't be all alone right now. I hate you, Judith, I screamed. I jammed the last section of sandwich into my mouth, but I didn't chew. I froze and listened. I heard something. Footsteps. Someone walking in the living room.
Chapter 21. This chapter is old enough to drink, and so is Dune, because I like to drink and I'm 26.
I swallowed the sandwich section whole and went tearing into the living room.
Mom? Dad? Were they back? Were they really back? No.
I stopped in the living room doorway when I saw Clarissa. She was standing in the center of the room, her black hair reflecting the light from the front window, a pleased smile on her face. Her bright red shawl was draped loosely over her shoulders. She wore a long black jumper over a white, high-collared blouse.
"You?"
I cried breathlessly. "How did you get in?" She shrugged. Her smile grew wider.
"Why did you do this to me?"
I shrieked, my anger bursting out of me. "How could you do this to me?" I demanded, gesturing at the empty living room, the empty house. "I didn't," she replied quickly. She walked to the window. In the bright afternoon sunlight, her skin appeared pale and wrinkled. She looked so old.
But,
I sputtered, too furious to speak. "You did it," she said, her smile fading. "You made the wish I granted it." "I didn't wish for my family to disappear," I screamed, striding into the room. My hands were balled into tight fists, which is much better than your fist into tight balls. Damn, I didn't think that one through. "I didn't wish for everyone in the world to disappear. You did that. You wish for Judith Bellwood to disappear," Clarissa said, adjusting the shawl on her shoulders. "I granted the wish as best as I knew how." "No, you tricked me," I insisted angrily. She snickered. "Magic is often unpredictable.
Look at Neville Longbottom," she said.
"I figured you would not be happy with your last wish. That is why I've returned. You have one more wish. Would you like me to make it now?"
"Yes," I exclaimed. "I want my family back. I want all the people back. I want..."
"Be careful," like the title of the book, she warned, pulling the red glass ball from the purple bag. "Think carefully before you make your final wish. I am trying to repay your kindness to me. I did not want you to be unhappy with the result of your wish." I started to reply, but stopped. She was right. I had to be careful. I had to make the right wish this time, and I had to say it in the right way. "Take your time," she urged softly. "Since this is your final wish, it shall be permanent. Be very careful." I stared into her eyes as they turned from black to red, reflecting the red glow of the ball in her hand. And I thought as hard as I could, what should I wish for?
Chapter 22, yeah.
The light from the living room window faded as the clouds rolled over the sun. As the light dimmed, the old woman's face darkened. Deep, black ruts formed beneath her eyes, like dunes. Lines creased her foreheads. Just one forehead. She has one forehead. She seemed to sag into the shadows. "Here is my wish," I said in a trembling voice. I spoke slowly, carefully. I wanted to consider each word, unlike I do when reading these. I didn't want to slip up this time. I didn't want to give her a chance to trick me. "I am listening," she whispered, her face completely covered by shadow now, except for her eyes, glowing as red as fire. I cleared my throat, took a deep breath. "Here is my wish," I repeated carefully. "I wish for everything to return to normal, except I want everything to be exactly the same way it was, but," I hesitated, "should I finish this part of it?" "Yes," I told myself. "I want everything to be the way it was, but I think I want, or sorry, but I want Judith to think that I'm the greatest person who ever lived. I will grant your third wish, even though it's trivial as fuck and no one gives a fuck about goddamn elementary school or junior high or whatever the hell you're in. Think about real world, real world," she said, raising the glass ball high. "Your second wish will be canceled. Time will be back up to this morning. Goodbye, Samantha." "Goodbye," I said. I was swallowed up by the radiating red glow. When it faded, Clarissa had vanished. "Sam! Sam, rise and shine!" My mother's voice floated up to my room from downstairs. I sat up in my bed, instantly awake. "Mom!" I cried happily. I remembered everything. I remembered waking up in an empty house, in an empty world, and remembered my third wish. But time had gone back to this morning. I glanced at the clock. 7. Mom was waking me up at the usual time. "Mom!" I leaped out of bed, ran downstairs in my nightshirt, and joyfully threw my arms around her, hugging her tight. "Mom!" I should call my mom. Maybe I'll text her. "Sam, are you okay?" She stepped back, a startled expression on her face. "You running a fever?" "Good morning," I cried happily, hugging Pumpkin. "Oh, where's Franklin?" Who seemed just as startled. "Is Dad still home?" I was so eager to see him, too, to know he was back. "He left a few minutes ago," Mom said, still examining me suspiciously with her eyes. "Oh, Mom," I exclaimed. I couldn't conceal my happiness. I hugged her again. "Whoa!" I heard Ron enter the kitchen behind us. I turned to see him staring at me, his eyes narrowed in disbelief behind his glasses. I ran over and hugged him, too. "Mom, what did you put in her orange juice?" he demanded, struggling to back away from me. "Yuck! Let go of me!" Mom shrugged, knowing that it was MDMA. "Don't ever ask me to explain your sister," she replied dryly. She turned to the kitchen cabinets. "Go get dressed, Samantha. You don't want to be late." "What a beautiful morning," I exclaimed. "Yeah, beautiful," Ron replied, yawning. "You must have had some terrific dreams or something, Sam." I laughed and hurried upstairs to get dressed. I couldn't wait to go to school. I couldn't wait to see my friends, to see the halls filled once again with talking, laughing faces. Pedaling my bike as hard as I could, I grinned every time a car passed. I love seeing people again. This sounds like the Thursday happy shows of the after disaster, but I'm gonna keep going. I waved at Mrs. Miller across the street, bending to pick up her morning paper. "That's a nice ass, Miss Miller." I didn't even mind when the Carter's Terrier came chasing after my bike, barking his high-pitched yips and nipping at my ankles rather than ankling at my nipples. That one was much better. "Good dog," I cried gleefully. "Everything is normal," I told myself. "Everything is wonderfully normal." I opened the front door to the school to the sound of crashing locker doors and shouting kids. "Great!" I cried out loud. A sixth grader came tearing around the corner and bumped right into me, practically knocking me over as I made my way to my locker. I didn't cry out angrily. I just smiled. I was so happy to be back in school, back in my crowded, noisy school. Unable to stop grinning, I unlocked my locker and pulled open the door. I called out a cheerful greeting to some friends across the hall. I even said good morning to Mrs. Reynolds, our principal. Ew!
Hey, Stork! A seventh grade boy called to me. He made a funny face, then disappeared around the corner. I didn't give a shit. I don't care what anyone calls me. The sound of so many voices was so wonderful. As I started to take my coat off, I saw Judith and Anna arrive. They were busy chatting, both talking at once, but Judith stopped when she saw me. Hi, Judith! I called warily. I wondered what Judith would be like now. Would she treat me any different? Would she be nicer to me? Would she remember how much she and I used to hate each other? Would she be any different at all? Judith gave Anna a little wave and came hurrying up to me. Morning, Sam, she said and smiled. Then she pulled off her wool ski cap and I gasped.
Chapter 23.
The Michael Jordan of chapters. Yeah, because it's a basketball book. Basketball. Michael Jordan. I know tons of things. I saw Space Jam. I think I said that in the last episode. Whatever. Judith, your hair! I cried out in astonishment. Do you like it? She asked, staring at me eagerly. She had cut it shorter like mine and had tied it in a ponytail on the side. Just like mine. I guess, I stammered. She breathed a sigh of relief and smiled at me. Oh, I'm so glad you like it, Sam, she cried gratefully. It looks just like yours, doesn't it? Or did I cut it too short? Should it be longer? She studied my hair. I think yours might be longer. No, it's great, Judith, I told her, backing towards my locker. Of course, it's not as good as yours, Judith continued, back in her normal voice, staring at my ponytail. My hair just isn't as pretty as yours. It isn't as fine. The color's too dark.
Franklin.
I don't believe this shit, I thought. It looks good, I said softly. I pulled my coat off and hung it in my locker. Then I bent to pick up my backpack. Let me carry that, Judith insisted. She grabbed it out of my hands. Really, I don't mind, Sam. I started to protest, but Anna interrupted.
Franklin, come here. Be nice to the cat, Jesus.
What are you doing? She asked Judith, flashing me a cold glance. Let's go to class.
You go without me, Judith replied. I want to carry Sam's backpack for her.
Huh? Anna's mouth dropped open. Are you totally losing it, Judith? She demanded. Judith ignored her question and turned back to me.
I love that t-shirt, Sam. It's ribbed, isn't it? For my pleasure? Did you get into the Gap?
That's where I got mine. Look, I'm wearing one just like yours.
I goggled in surprise because Google wasn't a word yet. How weird is that? There's a time before Google. Sure enough, Judith was wearing the same style t-shirt, only hers was gray and mine was pale blue.
Judith, what's your problem?
Anna asked, applying a 20th layer of bright orange lipstick on her lips.
And what did you do to your hair? She cried, suddenly noticing the new style.
Doesn't it look just like Sam's?
Judith asked, flipping the ponytail with one hand. Anna rolled her eyes.
Judith, have you gone psycho or something?
Give me a break, Anna, Judith replied.
I'd like to talk to Sam, okay?
Huh?
Anna knocked on Judith's head, as if knocking on a door.
Anyone home? See you later, okay?
Judith said impatiently. Anna sighed, then walked away warily. Judith turned back to me.
Can I ask you a favor?
Yeah, sure, I replied. What kind of favor? She hoisted my backpack over her left shoulder. Her own backpack hung on her right shoulder.
Would you help me work on my foul shot at practice this afternoon?
I wasn't sure if I had heard Judith correctly. I stared at her, my mouth hanging open. What?
Would you? She pleaded. I'd really like to try shooting fouls your way. You know, like underhanded. I bet I'd have a lot more control shooting them underhanded, the way you do.
This was too much. Too much! As I stared at Judith, I saw absolute worship in her eyes, like Dune has for Satan. Good old Satan.
She was the best foul shooter on the team, and here she was begging me to show her how to shoot
the klutzy way I did.
Yeah, okay, I'll try to help you.
Oh, thank you, Sam, she cried gratefully. You're such a pal, and do you think I could borrow your social studies notes later? Mine are such a mess.
Well, I said thoughtfully, my notes were so bad, even I couldn't make them out.
I'll copy them over and get them right back to you, I promise,
Judith said breathlessly. I think the weight of two backpacks was starting to get to her.
Okay, you can borrow them, I told her.
We started walking to class. Several kids stopped to stare at Judith, lugging two backpacks on her shoulders.
Where'd you get your Doc Martens?
She asked as we entered the room.
I want a pair just like yours.
What a laugh, I thought, very pleased with myself. This is an absolute riot. The change in Judith was simply hilarious. It was all I could do to not burst out laughing. Little did I know that my laughter would quickly turn to horror.
Chapter 24.
I started to get really embarrassed. Judith wouldn't leave me alone. She hung around me wherever I went. When I got up to sharpen my pencil, she followed me and sharpened hers. My throat got dry during a spelling test, and I asked Lisa if I could run out to the water fountain to get a drink. As I was bending over the fountain, she turned and slid a thumb up my butt. Oh no, and she just turned around and saw Judith behind her.
My throat's dry like your throat,
she explained, faking a cough. Later, during free reading, Lisa had to separate Judith and me because Judith wouldn't stop talking. At lunch, I took my usual place across the table from Corey. I had just started telling him about Judith's new attitude when she appeared at our table.
Could you move down a seat? She asked the kid sitting next to me. I want to sit next to Sam.
The kid moved and Judith dropped her lunch tray onto the table and took her seat.
Would you like to trade lunches?
She asked me.
Yours looks so much better than mine.
I was holding a mushed up tuna fish sandwich. This? I asked, waving it. Half the tuna fish fell out of the soggy bread.
Yum!
She exclaimed.
Want my pizza, Sam? Here it is. Take it.
She slid her tray in front of me.
You bring the best lunches. I wish my mom packed lunches like yours.
I could see Corey staring at me across the table, his eyes wide with disbelief. I couldn't believe it either. All Judith wanted from the world was to be exactly like me, just like everyone does with Dune. Hey! A few tables away, near the wall, Anna sat by herself. She looked really glum. I saw her glance over to our table, frowning. Then, she quickly lowered her eyes to her lunch. After lunch, Judith followed me to my locker. She helped me pull out my books and notebooks and asked if she could carry my backpack. At first, I thought this was all really funny, but then I started to get annoyed and embarrassed. I saw that kids were laughing at us. Two boys from my class followed us down the hall, snickering. I heard other kids talking about Judith and me in the hall. They stopped when Judith and I walked by, but I saw amused smirks on their faces.
She's making me look like a total fucking asshole,
I realized. The whole school is laughing at us.
Are you getting braces?
Judith asked me as we made our way back to the classroom.
Someone told me you were getting braces.
Yeah, I'm getting them, I grumbled, rolling my eyes.
Great, Judith declared.
Then I want to get them too. After school, I hurried to the gym expecting to have basketball practice. In all the excitement over the wishes, I had forgotten that we had an actual game that afternoon. The girls' team from Edgemont Middle School was already on the floor, warming up by shooting layovers, crossing hoops, shooting to the moon, doing some swishes, basketballing, putting up bricks, jump shots, three-pointers, Harlem Globetrotters, you know, Washington Generals, doing the spin around the ball move, selling cheeseburgers. Most of their shots were dropping in. They were big, tough-looking girls. We had heard that they were a really good team, and they looked it.
That means they're black.
I changed quickly and hurried out the locker room. My teammates were huddled around Ellen for the last-minute instructions. As I jogged over them, I crossed my fingers on both hands and prayed I wouldn't make too big of a fool of myself in the game. Judith grinned at me as I joined the huddle. Then, she practically embarrassed me out of my Reeboks by shouting,
"Here she is! Here comes our star!"
Anna and the others laughed, of course, but then their smiles quickly faded when Judith interrupted Ellen to announce,
"Before the game starts, I think we should name Sam our team captain."
"You're joking," Anna cried. A few girls laughed. Ellen stared at me, bewildered.
"Our best player should be our captain,"
Judith continued in all seriousness,
"so it should be Sam, not me." "All in favor, raise your hand."
Judith shot her hand up in the air, but no one else did. What's your problem? Anna asked her nastily. What are you trying to do, Judith? Ruin our team? Judith and Anna got into an angry shouting match over that.
Look, bitch, you can't be hanging out with Sam and shit. Fuck you, Kyle. Tell him hang out with whatever I want. You ain't my baby daddy.
What am I doing? And Ellen had to pull them apart. Ellen stared at Judith as if she had lost her mind or something. Then she said, let's worry about the captain later. Let's go out and play a good game, okay? The game was a disaster. Judith copied everything I did. If I tried to dribble, that's when you bounce the ball up and down. I know that. Don't even worry about it. And tripped over my feet, Judith would dribble and drip. If I threw a bad pass that was intercepted by the other team, Judith would throw a bad pass. When I missed an easy layup under the basket, Judith did the same thing, deliberately missing the next time she had the ball. It was one flub after another, doubled because of Judith copying me. And the whole time she kept clapping and shouting, cheering me on. Way to go, Sam! Nice try, Sam! You're the best, Sam! It was so obnoxious, and I could see the girls on the Edgemont team snickering at us and laughing out loud when Judith fell headfirst into the bleachers just because I had done it a few plays before. Anna and the other girls on my team weren't laughing. Their expressions were glum and angry. You're deliberately fucking up, Anna accused Judith about halfway through the game. I am not, Judith replied shrilly. Why are you copying that clumsy ox? I heard Anna demand. Judith grabbed her, knocked her down, and they began wrestling angrily on the floor, screaming and tearing at each other furiously. It took Ellen and the referee to stop the fight. Both girls were given a harsh lecture about sportsmanship and sent to the locker room. Ellen made me sit down on the bench. I was glad. I really didn't feel like playing anymore. As I watched the rest of the game, I couldn't concentrate on it at all. I kept thinking about my third and final wish, and how I'd blown it again. To my dismay, I realized that having Judith worship me was much worse than having her hate me. At least when she hated me, she left me the fuck alone. I had made three wishes, and each of them had turned into a nightmare. Now, I was stuck with Judith following me around, hanging on my every word, constantly praising everything I did, fawning over me like a lovesick puppy, and, mainly, being an unbelievable pest. Oh my goodness. Wow. I actually longed for the days when she had made fun of me in front of the whole class, when she had followed after me calling, Bird, why don't you fly away? Why don't you fly away, Bird? But what could I do? My three wishes were up. Was I going to be stuck with Judith for the rest of my life? We lost the game by 15 or 16 points. I didn't pay much attention to the score. I just wanted to get out of there. But when I trudged into the locker room, Judith was waiting for me. She handed me a towel. Good game! She cried, slapping me a high five. Huh? I could only gape at her. Can we study together after dinner? She asked with pleading eyes. Please? You could help me with my algebra. You're so much better at it than I am. You're a real genius when it comes to algebra. Luckily, every time I drink like that, which is now, I'm realizing not every time, the majority is because there's like a break where time passes and then the drinking insinuates it. It's like the moving a cassette and then putting another cassette, the Geo does. It's my drinking that says, time has passed. Luckily, I had to go with my parents to visit my aunt for dinner. That gave me a good excuse not to study with Judith. But what would be my excuse next night? And the next? And the next? My aunt wasn't feeling well, and the purpose of our visit was to cheer her up. I'm afraid I didn't do a very good job. I barely said a word. I couldn't stop thinking about Judith. What could I do about her? I could get angry and tell her to leave me the fuck alone, but I knew that wouldn't help. I had wished for her to think I was the greatest person who ever lived. Now, Judith was under an enchantment, under the power of the Crystal Woman's spell. Telling her to go away wouldn't discourage her in the least. Could I just ignore her? That wouldn't be easy, since she's constantly at my shadow, asking me a million questions, begging to wait on me like a servant. What could I do? What? I thought about it all the way home. Even my parents noticed I was distracted.
What's the problem, Sam? Have you been seeing Dr. Stone?
Brought it back, my mother demanded as we drove home.
Oh, nothing, I lied. Just thinking about schoolwork.
When we got home, there were 4 phone messages on the answering machine for me. All from Judith. My mother stared at me, curious.
That's funny. I don't remember your being friends with her before, she said.
Yeah, she's in my class, I told her. I didn't want to explain. I knew I couldn't explain. I hurried to my room. I was totally exhausted from all the worrying, I guess.
I got changed into a nightshirt, clicked off the light, and climbed into bed. For a while, I lay staring up at the ceiling, watching shadows of the tree outside my window weaving back and forth. I tried to clear my mind, tried to picture fluffy white sheep flying over fluffy white clouds. I was just drifting off to sleep when I heard the floorboards creak. Opening my eyes, I saw a black shadow move against the darkness of my closet. I uttered a choking cry as I realized that someone was in my fucking room. Before I could move, a hot, dry hand grabbed me by the arm.
Chapter 25.
I tried to scream, but the hand slid up over my mouth. I'm going to choke, I thought, frozen in panic. I can't breathe.
Shh, don't scream,
my attacker whispered. The lights clicked on. The hand left my mouth. Judith? I rasped, my voice catching in my throat. She smiled at me, her green eyes flashing with excitement, and raised a finger to her lips.
Shh.
Judith, what are you doing here? I managed to cry, finding my voice. My heart was still pounding so hard, like I'd just done a fat rail. I could barely breathe. How did you get in? Your back door was unlocked.
Wink, wink, she pointed to a bottle of lube.
I hid in the closet to wait for you. I guess I fell asleep for a little while.
But why? I demanded angrily, pulling myself up and lowering my feet to the floor.
What do you want? Her smile faded. Her mouth formed a pout.
You said we could study together,
she said in a little girl voice.
So I waited for you, Sam.
That was the last straw.
Get out, I cried.
I started to say more, but a knock on my door startled me into silence.
Sam, are you okay? My dad called in.
Are you talking to someone?
No, I'm fine, Dad, I said. You're not on the phone, are you? He asked suspiciously. You know you're not supposed to call people this late.
No, I'm going to sleep now, I told him. I waited till I heard his footsteps on the stairs. Then I turned back to Judith.
You have to go home, I whispered, as soon as the coast is clear.
But why?
She demanded, hurt.
You said we're going to study our algebras.
I did not, I cried. Anyway, it's too late. You have to go home. Your parents must be nuts worrying about you, Judith.
She shook her head. I sneaked out. They think I'm asleep in bed, she smiled. But that's so great of you to worry about my parents, Sam. You really are the most considerate girl I know.
Her stupid compliment made me even angrier. I was so furious. I wanted to tear her apart with my bare fucking hands.
It would be cool if they spelled bear differently, and she was like, I have bare hands.
I love your room, she gushed, glancing around quickly. Did you pick out all the posters yourself?
I sighed in total exasperation.
See, that time I was just drinking to get alcohol in my system. It's not always a break.
Judith, I want you to go home now, I snarled slowly, one word at a time, so maybe she would understand.
Can we study together tomorrow? She pleaded. I really need your help, Sam.
Maybe, I replied, but you can't sneak into my house anymore, and
you're so smart,
Judith gushed.
Where'd you get that nightshirt? The stripes are terrific. I wish I had one like it.
Motioning for her to be silent, I crept into the hall. All the lights had been turned off. My parents had gone to bed. Tugging Judith by the hand, I led the way downstairs, tiptoeing slightly, taking it one step at a time, just like recovery. Then I practically shoved her out the front door and swung it closed with a soft click behind her. I stood in the dark entryway, panting hard, my mind racing. What can I do? What can I do? What can I do? It took me hours to get to sleep, and when I finally drifted off, I dreamed about Judith.
See, that was a pausing drink. You never know what they are. Oh my god, I keep you guys on your toes, don't I? That Dune, him and his reading goosebumps.
You look tired, dear,
my mom said at breakfast. I didn't sleep very well, I confessed. When I headed out the front door to go to school, Judith was waiting for me by the driveway. She smiled at me and waved cheerily.
I thought we could walk to school together this morning, she chirped. But if you want to ride your bike, I'll be happy to run alongside. Like the black guy from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, I'll just hang out and run by the bay and stuff. It'll be awesome.
No, I shrieked. No, please, no. I totally lost it. I couldn't stand it anymore. I dropped my backpack and started to run. I didn't know where I was running. I didn't care. I just knew I had to run away. So far away from her. Sam, wait up. I turned to see her chasing after me. No, please, go away. Go away, I screamed. But I could see her pick up speed, her sneakers thudding against the sidewalk, starting to catch up. I turned into someone's yard and ran behind a hedge, trying to lose her. I didn't really know what I was doing. I had no plan, no destination. Just like Dune, I just had to run. Unlike Dune, I was running through backyards, across driveways, behind garages. And Judith followed me, running at full speed, her short ponytail bobbing as she ran. Sam, wait, Sam! She cried breathlessly. Sam! Suddenly, I was running through the woods, a thick tangle of trees and tall weeds. I weaved through them, first this way, then that. Jumping over fallen branches, plunging through thick piles of dead brown leaves. I've got to lose her, I told myself. I've got to get away, just like the... Wow. Just like the Lenny Kravitz song. But then, I stumbled over an upraised tree root and fell sprawling face down on the carpet of dead leaves. Typical klutz move. And a second later, Judith was standing over me. Chapter 26. The final chapter. I glanced up from the ground and saw to my shock that it wasn't Judith. Clarissa hovered over me, her red shawl tight around her shoulders, her black eyes staring intently. You! I cried angrily and started scrambling to my feet. You are unhappy? She said softly, frowning. Your wishes have ruined my life! I cried, furiously brushing dead leaves off the front of my sweater. I don't want you to be unhappy, she replied. I was trying to repay you for your kindness. I wish I'd never met you, I cried angrily. Very well. She raised the round red crystal ball in one hand. As she raised it, her dark eyes began to glow, the same scarlet color.
Scarlet!
As the crystal. I will cancel your third wish. Make one final wish since you are so unhappy. I shall grant you one more. I can hear the crunching of the leaves close behind me. Judith was catching up. I wish I'd never met you, I cried to the crystal woman. I wish Judith had met you instead of me. The crystal glowed brighter until the red light surrounded me in its glare. When it faded, I was standing on the edge of the woods. Whew! I thought, what a relief! What a great break! I'm so lucky! I bet she isn't lucky. We'll find out, won't we, listeners? I could see Judith and Clarissa standing in the shade of a wide tree. They were huddled together, talking intently. This is the perfect revenge, I told myself. Now Judith will make a wish, and her life will be totally ruined. Chuckling to myself, I strained to hear what they were saying. I was dying to know what Judith would wish for. I'm pretty sure I heard Judith say, "Bird, why don't you fly away?" But that didn't make any sense. I was so happy, so deliriously happy, I was free, totally free. I suddenly felt so different, lighter, happier. Let Judith have her wishes, I thought gleefully. Let her see what it's like. Tilting my head, I saw a juicy brown earthworm poke its head up from the ground. All of a sudden, I was feeling pretty hungry. I jabbed my head forward and caught the end of the worm. Then I ate it. Very tasty. I fluttered my wings, testing the winds. Then I took off, flying low over the woods. The cool breeze felt so refreshing against my feathers. As I fluttered my wings harder, swooping higher into the sky, I glanced down and saw Judith. She was standing beside Clarissa. Judith stared up at me from the ground. I guess she got her first wish because she had the biggest smile on her face. The end.
Bullshit!
What the fuck? I'm sorry there was two terrible episodes again. You can blame Nina, even though you should still pay me more money. Because, dear God, she chose this one, and this is fucking terrible. So, we learned that wishes,
don't work out for you if you're a douchebag. But if you're a total cunt, everything goes well for you. Wait. Actually, that's a great lesson for high school, life, and everything else. Wait, maybe this was a good book. Look. If you're a well-off cunt that everyone likes, everything's gonna go well for you, and there's not much you can do to fuck it up. But if you're kind of douchey and a klutz, even though you have a good heart and you try your hardest, shit's gonna end up horrible. That's just how things go. It was a good lesson. I'm glad Arlstein taught it to all of us. So the point is, just give up trying, you know? You are. It's all genetically predisposed. There's nothing you can do to change it. You know what? All you really can do is stay spooky, bitches.